The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn.
Welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a podcast for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews. Thank you for joining us.
We are super excited about this show. Like, really excited.
Yeah, it's because another first.
We have a guest today. Woohoo! And I'm going to go ahead and let you do the first introduction of our guest. Christy, take it away.
So today we have Bernadette Smith. She is awesome. I'm going to read the bio. She's one of my favorite people in the wedding industry and also a mentor and important in my career as well as Michelle's.
Yes.
Bernadette's life work is to ensure that same-sex couples, no matter where they live, have the most positive, supportive experience while planning their wedding. In addition to being a wedding planner, Bernadette is building a global tribe of wedding professionals who are sensitive, trained, and ready. She is founder and president of 14 Stories and the Gay Wedding Institute and is widely considered the nation's leading same-sex wedding expert. In 2004, when marriage equality first came to Massachusetts, Bernadette envisioned a wedding production company for engaged same-sex couples looking to navigate a traditional wedding industry. Since 2004, she and her team have produced hundreds of gay and lesbian weddings, working with couples from nearly every United States and around the world. Since 2004, that's a big deal.
Since 2004, people. And I'm going to go on to say that Bernadette's expertise has been sought after by the Today Show, the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN, Travel and Leisure, and National Public Radio, among others, such as
the Big Wedding Planning Podcast,
which is the biggest, of course, by far. Bernadette is an award-winning author of three books on same-sex weddings and is featured blogger on the Knot and Huffington Post, y'all. Bernadette regularly speaks about LGBT weddings around North America. She is also a Wedding Wire education contributor. Drum roll. Welcome, Bernadette.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's awesome to be here. That's a really kind introduction. Thanks so much. And 2004, it makes me sound old. I'm 39. I've been doing this for 12 years, but I don't know, for some reason that introduction made me feel old.
I know, isn't that weird? When you actually think about the years. Actually, I'm going to be moving, and I was going through, like, I'm reading this book that tells you how to get rid of a lot of shit, like everything that you don't need, and if you hold it in your hands, it doesn't give you joy, like, get rid of it, right? So it's very cleansing. It's really nice. And yesterday, I'm unpacking boxes that we haven't opened in 5 years. And do you know, and Christy knows exactly what these look like, after I would finish a wedding, I would put all of the contents of the binder into a manila envelope, write the name of the wedding outside, and file it away, right? I was going through hundreds of those folders from, like, I don't know, 12 years ago, and going, are you kidding me? Like, some of the names I didn't recognize, and I'm like, this is so old. Like, I need to get rid of this, and I am so old. So I know how you feel.
Don't let any of your former clients hear that you didn't recognize their names.
I won't do that.
By the way, that book you're reading, is it the tidying up one by the...
Yes!
Okay. It's a little culty.
It's,
so don't
oh,
get
really?
All preachy with me. Yeah, it's
it
a
is?
Little, like, people who read it, you know, it's like, oh my God, it's changing my life. Let me tell you all about it. You know how I feel about stuff like that.
About cults?
Well, about, like, the awesome new trend that everyone's so, like, oh, this gets the toxins out of my body, and I just can't.
You want all the toxins in your body, and you want nothing new.
And I want storage in my garage with weddings from 2005.
Yes.
I don't want all that.
I can ship mine to you if you want.
You know,
they're not gone yet.
This is gonna be like your new thing.
Yeah, it's my new thing.
It's going to be a TV show.
It's exhausting, I know. Is it really?
Mm-hmm. It's got an option for a sitcom, I think. Anyway. Which one of us met you first, Bernadette? I did, right?
No.
Are you sure?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I met Bernadette. Well, in person, potentially you first, but virtually, I met Bernadette.
Well,
first.
I met her first virtually because I took that class in 2010. That was the first...
The class I taught?
No, the class she teaches. The certification course I did, that first online webcast live version you had in 2010. Mm-hmm. And then soon after that, you were on the East Coast, Michelle, so I thought you met her then.
So I met Bernadette when I was teaching the wedding planning course at San Francisco State, which I believe the first one I taught was either 2009. I think it was 2009 or 10. Oh, it was before that.
You don't have to fight over it, girl.
Bernadette,
it's okay.
Clearly, we didn't make much of an impression if you're like, I don't know which one.
I don't know.
Who
whatever.
You guys
She's like,
again?
It doesn't. I know a lot of people. Well,
I have several other podcasts to be a guest on today. So if we could wrap this up.
We got to get going on this, ladies. No, so I will say that when I was teaching, and I still do teach the wedding planning course at San Francisco State College of Extended Learning to the special events students, the business of wedding planning, they told me you can have a guest speaker and, you know, we have a stipend for that. And I was like, cool. Like, I knew so many florists and photographers. I knew so many people, but I was like, I really want to, like, find something that's, you know, different and, you know, important right now. And, of course, you know, back then, same-sex weddings was really new but very, very hot topic, as it still is.
Yeah, and super confusing
in California.
But now for
different reasons. Super confusing California, especially because, you know, the 2008 thing happened and we were just like, what the hell is going on? And so I went online and found Bernadette. Information. I was super impressed and I was like, oh God, I'm going to ask her to be my speaker. I know she's not going to want to do it. And I think I called you. I think I called you on the phone and nervously said, hi, I'm a wedding planner. Would you speak at my class? And she's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, really?
She's like, quadruple that stipend.
Yeah.
Stipend? What?
No, she was awesome. Yeah. She was, I mean, everybody, and we did. On Skype, it was on Skype because you were in Boston at the time and I lived in San Francisco at the time. And it was awesome. I like sat there in the back of the class writing notes and just like, just couldn't, I was just so blown away by all of this information.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's fun. I definitely feel really grateful that I have a career that I'm super passionate and obsessed with. I mean, even 12 years later, I am still like obsessively tweaking my curriculum and I don't know. I really love what I do. Absolutely love what I do. And I know not everyone gets to feel that way. Even the days in which it's stressful and I, you know, freak out about things, at the end of the day, I have just so much gratitude.
You're a hustler too.
It's really
That's
cool.
Another inspiring aspect about you and just knowing you is there's no like stopping and resting, just being like, I think I got it. I'll adjust some things as the laws change, which they are. And you do have to adjust things that way. But more than that is like, what new avenues can I pursue to get this word out? And who else can I teach about gay weddings? And, you know, also with the Equality Institute, it's like, I so appreciate your forward thinking in terms of like always moving past where you already are.
Yeah.
Thank you. I feel very much that I'm a total entrepreneur. Like I am always in a space of, well, I'm often in the space of looking ahead, trying to anticipate needs, trying to figure out what's next, which means I don't always live in the present. I can own that. But it's essentially how I've built my career is looking around and trying to see what needs are not being met. Do I have any interest in meeting them? And if so, how can I go about doing that? And you know, a few years ago, it may have been even 4, 5, or 6 years ago, I made a list of non-goals.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Which were things that were potential directions I could go in that were all related to LGBT weddings that I did not want to go in. Mm. Like, I could have been a blogger. I could have decided, you know, I'm going to spin off and do a blog, or I'm going to spin off and do expos, or so many other different ways I could have spun off my business. But at the end of the day, it wasn't really of interest to me. And so I just let that stuff go. And all of that has kept me focused. So
did you feel like the act of writing it down, your do not complete list, actually allowed you to let it go? Or did you have to check it sometimes and be like, remind yourself what you are not interested in?
No, I think that the act itself was pretty good. I'm an extremely detailed, organized note taker and saver of things. So, like, digitally, I don't save a lot of things non-digitally, but I have a lot of systems and structures in my business and processes, and I don't know. I always write stuff like that down. It's just the way my mind works. My mind, like, it operates in bullets. That's how I think in process info.
Yeah, you do a little brain dump, right? Like, just get it out.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I synthesize information really quickly, and I think that that's kind of what makes me a good teacher of this content, is by sort of taking complicated, in some ways, complicated concepts and making them simpler. It's just how my brain works, and I think it's why it's effective for helping people understand all this LGBTQ wedding stuff.
Well, that's helpful for any wedding planning also, is like, this is a very large thing we're going to do.
Yes.
So let's break it down into
yes.
smaller, more easy to take pieces.
Correct.
Can you just stop for a moment for those listeners who do not know what LGBTQ stands for, Bernadette?
Yeah, sure. L is for lesbian. G is for gay, and B is for bisexual. All of those three things are examples of a sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. T stands for transgender, or someone who's transitioning gender from male to female, or female to male, or who has transitioned their gender. And Q stands for queer, which is a pretty controversial term, but ultimately, the most succinct definition of queer is someone who is fluid in their presentation of gender or sexuality. So someone who doesn't conform to the male, female, straight, gay boxes. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they're often self-identifying as queer, although that term does have such a charged emotion, is very emotionally charged, particularly for people who've been called queer as a slur in a derogatory way. So it's controversial, but LGBTQ is a pretty solid broad term used to describe this community. And by the way, I'm a lesbian.
Hi, thank you. Nice to meet you.
Got it.
I'm Bernadette Smith, and I'm a lesbian.
Awesome. Thank you for breaking that down, because I know a lot of people probably wonder about that. And by the way, as we go through this podcast today, anything that you know that people wonder about or that should be explained, just jump in, throw it out, educate us, as that is what you're so good at.
Yeah, let's fire off some questions. We want to sort of set a precedent for how we have guests on this show, by just getting to know you and picking your brain a little bit. And then, you know, one of the main reasons we wanted to talk to you was to hear firsthand some of your experiences planning gay weddings. And so we'll want to hear about those too at the end, but we have some rapid fire sort of questions. I wrote out a bunch and Michelle kind of edited it, because I was mostly like wanting to talk about, you know, politics and the convention.
Yeah,
and,
like who are you voting for? That's not appropriate.
I was kind of kidding. I think I kind of know the answer, but it was, you know, she's like, give me some questions. And that's all anyone's thinking about right now. So,
well, I'm with her.
Yes.
I'm with her too.
I'm with her too, damn it.
And also, big props to my girl RBG these days as well. I just got to get that in there.
I feel like I want to ask all these questions for sure, but let me ask you something. Just how did you come to? I mean, did you always know you wanted to be a wedding planner? Like, how did you get into this?
No. I have a film degree.
Yeah,
I used to want to make documentaries. I mean, becoming a wedding planner was totally accidental. It was. I mean, I'm sure people who know me from high school or college just think it's the most random career. But to me, it's not just being a wedding planner. To me, my career is about being an activist and being an advocate for the LGBTQ community. So my story starts when I was in my mid-20s and my friends Lisa and Lynn invited me to their commitment ceremony. And at the reception, the DJ made all these, like, horrible remarks, and we actually had to kick him out of the reception.
No way.
And, I mean, yeah, it was awful. And it was something that I'll never forget. It was just, like, he was saying things like, I want to take you lesbians home with me, stuff that was just awful. And then a few years later, or actually it was actually later that year, I was living in Boston, and the state Supreme Court of Massachusetts ruled in favor of marriage equality, which was basically setting Massachusetts up as the first state in the country to have full equality. Mm-hmm. And so I'd been planning events for nonprofits, and I knew that it was a skill that I had. I was really good at it, and I never, ever really truly pursued documentary filmmaking. I just never took that path. And so I was... You know, marriage equality came to the state, and I thought back to what Lisa and Lynn went through, and I thought, you know what? These couples are going to have a hard time. They're going to have a hard time in this industry. They're going to have a hard time potentially being rejected, navigating a traditional industry. And so I decided to start a wedding planning business with an LGBT specialty, and my company was originally called It's About Time.
Ah.
Because it was about time for marriage equality. So that was sort of the clever initial name of the company. But I started it to be an advocate, and that's really how it's always what my approach has always been.
So that being said, have you planned any straight weddings?
Yeah, I've planned a few. Mostly it's word of mouth referrals. Actually, I have an intake call with a potential straight couple tonight about their wedding. So, you know, we'll see how that goes.
So you're going to have to change your lingo and how you speak to them. Are you going to do it? Like, are you conscious of that? Because that's one thing that I learned from you, is to be careful in the way you speak, like no more bridal party and things mm-hmm. such as this. Right.
Right. Yeah. So I definitely have to be conscious of my wording, because there have been a number of times in which I've received calls mm-hmm. from opposite sex couples, and my assumption has always been that there's another partner of the same gender, and I've messed up. I've messed up on those calls the way I teach others not to mess up. So, yeah, I'll definitely have to be conscious of it. One of the other types of couples that's come to me, straight couples, has been couples who've hired me because they have like a gay or lesbian sibling. Uh-huh. And so they want to work with someone who is, you know, a little bit more outside the box and also really sensitive to the needs of their family.
Ah.
Yeah, that's been pretty cool.
And I asked you this the other day when we were talking on the phone, because I ask this to most people that I like, but what are some of your favorite podcasts?
Yeah, I love podcasts. I don't listen to the radio very much anymore. So podcasts are definitely kind of one way I decompress. And I always try to listen to podcasts when I'm doing mundane things like washing the dishes or watering the garden or running to CVS or something. So I listen, my very favorite interviewer of all time that I totally geek out about is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air on NPR. I love her. I'm absolutely idolized Terry Gross. I also listen to some of WTF with Mark Maron, some of the Tim Ferriss show. I love 99% Invisible. Mm-hmm. I have recently started listening to the Modern Love podcast. I listen to Tom Ashbrook's On Point, which is just a podcast version of his nightly news show on NPR. I just started listening to Revisionist History with Malcolm Gladwell. Freakonomics podcast. So some really good ones. But I have a hard time listening to podcasts where there's more than two people talking. So I can't listen to any where there's a panel or more than one guest or more than one interviewer.
Yeah.
I really have a hard time processing it. Too many voices.
So you wouldn't be listening to this right now, Bernadette, is that what you're saying?
Well, only one of you is really talking at a time, so I think I can handle it.
We're being good about not talking over each other, right? Christy, talk over me.
Yes, right. We are trying
stop
not
it.
To do
oh,
that.
Yeah, wait, oh, what?
You go.
Okay.
I'll go.
Okay, you go. No, seriously, go ask her the next question.
Okay. This is a, so other than what you've already mentioned, maybe some of the more, the lighter stuff or the silly stuff, what are two things that you feel like you're really good at and one thing that you're horrible at?
Oh, okay. So, I mean, I'm definitely really good at my job, but you probably don't want to hear that stuff. I like the organizational stuff of my job. I'm a pretty good cook, actually. I'm not really a baker, but I'm pretty good at looking in the refrigerator and the pantry and seeing what's left and making a pretty good meal out of it.
Oh, hey, awesome. Good for you.
I don't like recipes. I like to improvise. So I'm definitely good at that.
And what are you bad at? Not so good at.
Oh, what am I bad at?
I bet you could think of more than two things.
Yeah, I'm not. I try to be a good gardener, but I would say that's not my strength. I want to be better, and I really do put forth an effort. But I just feel like one way or another, there are failures in the garden. So there's that.
You could stitch that on a throw pillow. One way or another, there are failures in the garden.
That is a good question, Christy. I think we need to ask, what would you stitch on a throw pillow if you use throw pillows?
I mean, well, we kind of did have that written down as like what we're going to ask you what your favorite motto or mantra is that you, at least these days, find yourself repeating a lot. I know you're working on mindfulness, right?
Yeah, I am. I've been meditating daily for the past 6 months or so. It's totally been a game changer for me.
That is awesome. How long are you meditating?
I meditate for 15 to 20 minutes a day, mostly first thing when I wake up in the morning. And I feel like a lot more peaceful in my life. How I manage stress is significantly better. But I would say my sort of throw pillow mantra or whatever, like my adage is, I think I'm fueled by momentum. And so that to me means just keep moving forward. If you don't stop moving forward, then you kind of slowly fade away. And I know that the more I do, the more I start, the more I do. And I am just fueled by that momentum. I consider myself a visionary person, very much a philosophical Sagittarius, very much an optimistic. That's right. You're a Sag too, right, Michelle?
I am a Sag. Yeah. When's your birthday?
12/13.
Ooh, I'm 12/9.
And my partner has your exact birthday, so no wonder we like each other so much.
Yay!
Yeah. So I, a long time ago, I got the Sagittarius arrow tattooed on my right wrist. And people look at it and they think it's an anchor, but it's an arrow. But it's just it is a reminder for me to just keep moving forward, just to keep thinking ahead and going for it. And it's very much my philosophy.
That's awesome.
And just being positive. And I know, like I said before, I know that sometimes that means I'm not being present. And that has caused some failures, like my first marriage. However, I am working on that too.
Well, I think too that a lot of people get confused in that because you can plan for the future and you can, like you say, keep moving as long as you are being very aware of those steps, of the moments as you're doing that, right? As long as you're taking things in. And being present as you're doing it, right?
Yeah.
Because we all know we have something coming up, and we all have to keep things coming up.
Yeah, I felt like in my marriage there were lots of issues, but one of them was that for example, anytime we'd have a date night, it would be spent talking, like planning for something, not just being present with each other.
There is a question, actually. Sorry, it's not written down, Christy, but I just thought about
it. Don't go off book.
I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. Do you find yourself kind of, when you're working with your clients, do you kind of have a lot of the same advice, or I guess to anyone out there listening right now, maybe your favorite pieces of advice as they are going through the planning process, like what do you think is important?
Yeah, I think the first thing is remember that it's your wedding. It's not your sister's or your mother's or your brother's or anyone else's. It's your wedding, so it should reflect your vision, your personality. And I think sometimes that gets muddled. Not so much with my clients, but I've certainly seen it happen with others. I have had a few weddings recently where the parents start to pay, you know, more when I start working with younger couples, younger LGBT couples, their parents get involved generally in some way, even if it means it's just that they're paying, but they tend to have more influence and input, which obviously is very common with opposite sex couples. My advice, though, is always just focus on your vision. Focus on how you imagine your day. Make sure you and your partner are on the same page about it. But focus on that and don't let someone else's financial influence manipulate your own vision. So that's certainly one of them. Another one is it's great to take out traditions if they don't apply to you, but don't just take them out and sort of leave your reception empty. Make sure that you add something else in that gives your reception structure and flow. Because wedding
example.
So a lot of couples, let's say they're not going to dance. A lot of my clients, they might not dance with their mom or their dad, or they might not do a cake cutting, or sometimes they don't even do a first dance. Some of those wedding traditions that you see pretty typically happen at opposite sex weddings are less common at same-sex weddings. And so when couples are taking out those traditions, totally fine. Of course, they can do what they want. But those traditions actually add structure and flow, and they become conversation starters and photo ops, and they are a way to keep the momentum moving in the reception. So I always encourage my clients to add something else in. So whether that's some sort of quick entertainment, a performance of some sort, even a photo booth can add some structure and flow and interactivity. But something that's going to keep the momentum and the energy up at the reception. So, you know, I've had everything from drag performances to, you know, choreographed dance performances. We had aerial acrobats last year. So, I mean, whatever it is that reflects the couple, I love seeing elements like that in, especially when other traditions are removed. You know, those are a couple of really big ones that mean a lot to me. One thing that I love working with same-sex couples on is how they can take away, how they can adjust traditions that are very much gender-based for their own personalities and their own relationship. Because so many wedding traditions are based on gender roles. The role of the man and the role of the woman, or the role of the bride and the role of the groom, that are so much based on the groom not seeing the bride before the ceremony and the bride being presented. You know, all of those things that are so traditionally based on gender. And when a lot of same-sex couples don't have those roles in their relationship, it's really fun for me to talk to them about how to reinterpret those traditions, or just scrap them all together. Like, how are we entering the ceremony space if one of them doesn't want to walk down the aisle last? How do we talk through that? So it's really fun for me to help couples figure that stuff out.
So it can be like a reimagining of traditions that are already in place, and then also a process of sort of swapping out those micro events within a wedding that your clients aren't that into, or that just don't work or fit for whatever reason, and replacing them with something else so that as a five-hour event, there are still things that happen every half an hour or something to add that structure.
Yes, that's much more concise than what I just said.
Well, that's that. I think people a lot of times think, like, we're not going to do a bouquet toss. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. But the idea of, you know, reminding them, like, you don't gotta, but maybe consider doing something, because people at a wedding are like lemmings in some way. They need to know, like, who do we follow next?
Right.
What's happening next?
Right.
What's the next thing? And there's almost a sense of like restlessness that is palpable.
Exactly.
If you don't, you know, show them, here's a sign pointing you guys in this direction because that's what we're going to do next. I think people do get anxious, and that's a weird vibe to have at, you know, what should be a celebratory event. So
yeah,
I once was at an event in San Francisco many years ago at the Westin St. Francis, and David Tutero was there, and he had a book out, and he talked about how in an event you really should have something going on like every 20 to 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you should have something, whether it's
an announcement,
a speech,
or
or cutting the cake, mm-hmm. or the next, you know, course of the meal, whatever it is, you want to keep it flowing.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I don't say what I wouldn't say that I agree with him on much, but I do agree with him on that.
You've done over how many weddings? Well over 100.
Oh, yeah,
right,
hundreds.
Bernadette?
I don't know. I mean, several hundred.
Multiple hundreds. Yeah. So, I know this is probably like the question someone would ask you when they sit next to you on a plane or something, like, oh, you're a wedding planner? What's your favorite wedding of all time? And that's maybe too broad, but do you have a couple weddings in the, you know, course of your career thus far that have made the kind of impression that, like, stays with you and you reference it and talk about it and, you know, it made maybe a personal connection with you?
Yeah, absolutely. And you've probably heard me tell this story a number of times, Christy, but the wedding to me that still, you know, 5 years later feels the most meaningful is my former clients, Joanne and Terry. And the reason that it's significant is because Joanne is a trans woman who came out as trans in her 50s, male to female, mm-hmm. Had the support of the original spouse, but Barbara, that spouse, died of cancer. And Joanne transitioned and met Terry online, and she basically went, during the first meeting, she said to me, I want you to help me become the bride I've always dreamed of. And it's just such a profound thing to say. It just felt like such a challenge, and that it was a gift that I could give her. And so we went, you know, took her dress shopping, and she was so anxious about her shoulders being too broad or not having hips. She was worried that she was going to be discriminated against, that her hairpiece was going to fall off. I mean, she had all of these stressors about the process of finding the dress, and it really was an amazing experience for all of us. Terry was there as well, and she looked phenomenal in everything that she put on. She looked absolutely beautiful, and she walked out of the salon with the dress, and I think because she told me, I mean, I know it was still one of her most powerful experiences, and it certainly was for me as a planner. Also, she was in her probably, you know, early 60s or so when we were planning this wedding. So she was an older woman, and her 85-year-old father walked her down the aisle.
Oh,
how amazing was that?
I do love that story.
It was just so cool.
It seems profound that so many women, so many people, to be a bride is like the quintessential womanly experience for some people growing up. That's what they see as, I mean, we watched Princess Di on her wedding day and all these icons of femininity on their wedding day. And here she came to you, help me plan my wedding, help me be the bride I've always dreamed of, essentially asking you to help her become the woman she's always dreamed of. Which, as a wedding planner, I mean, you can't get a bigger gig than that. It would seem like, you know, the honor that you were trusted enough to be in that position.
Yeah.
And that you're the one she wanted to help guide her into this experience is just really cool.
A lot of pressure.
It felt you know what, it didn't feel that way. It felt like we were just, you know, I was just supporting her through it. And maybe leading her a bit, but ultimately I felt like just a very supportive friend. Mm-hmm. Obviously, mm-hmm. I was the hired help, but I felt, you know, we became friends, and I just had her back, and that comes down to why I started my company, is to be an advocate and to help people feel safe, and that's why I still do what I do, is about safety and allowing couples to really feel like they can express all of themselves, however that might look for each individual couple. So that's definitely one story that will always stand out to me.
And what did Terry wear?
Terry wore a custom suit. And Terry was also around the same age, maybe a little bit younger. And she had some ex-husbands and some kids from her previous marriages, and was also someone who came out later in life. And they met on Match.com, and their first date, really? I think, was bowling. And the proposal happened on a bowling alley. I mean, and it's been really cool sort of following them on Facebook as they've retired. Joanne is, like, competing at all these, like, senior bowling tournaments and stuff. It's really, really cute.
It's so cool. And did Terry's children come to the wedding, her ex-husbands?
No ex-husbands. Her kids were both in the wedding. They stood up with her. Joanne had a twin brother, or has a twin brother, and his kids stood up with her. So they had lots of family support.
That's mm-hmm. awesome.
That was what I was going to ask you next, just because you mentioned the ex-husbands. And I did a gay wedding on New Year's Eve, and one of the grooms had five brothers. There were six brothers total, this Irish Catholic family from Chicago. And all the brothers were there. All of them were married. And their mom, who was 93, was there as well. And then a bunch of nieces and nephews. And it was a very easy family dynamic to work
sure.
with. There were no issues on either side. But we do weddings a lot for, you know, straight couples, any couples, that you have to deal with so much
drama.
Family stuff. I can't sit next to this person. Don't put me in the eye line of that person. You know, just crazy stuff. So I wanted to hear if you had any stories where, on top of already complicated family stuff, there's maybe some people who are estranged, or the wedding was more emotional because someone wasn't there, or, you know, things that are more unique to the gay community.
Yeah, I had these two clients, or a couple from Manhattan a few years ago, and Jason and Dimitri were their names. And Dimitri grew up in Queens, which is also, you know, a borough of New York City. And at the first mm-hmm. meeting, they told me that probably the only member of Dimitri's family who would be at the wedding, or sorry, the only two who would be at the wedding would be his younger brother and his mom. But his father definitely wouldn't be there, and probably no extended family either, even though they all lived in the area. So as we start the planning process, I built a wedding website for them and put up some images that they had sent me in their photo gallery. One of the images was an image of both grooms with both moms together in New York. And Dimitri called me one night, and he said, he asked me if I could please take that photo down from the website, because his mom saw the picture and didn't want to be associated with her son's gay wedding. Like, she didn't want to be represented on that website. And not only that, but she would not be attending the wedding. So the only family member that Dimitri had in attendance was his younger brother. And it's super emotional. I mean, he was devastated. I mean, it affects things mm-hmm. like the dancing with parents. You know, Dimitri didn't have anyone to dance with. He wasn't going to dance with his mom. He wasn't going to dance with Jason's mom. So we ended up not doing a parent dance. It affected the dynamics for the portraits, the photo sessions, and how Dimitri just felt left out. I mean, it's just really heartbreaking when that happens. And unfortunately, I've seen it happen too often. But that story felt particularly harsh to me because they were just right there. They were like 5 miles away, and they couldn't right. just get it together. And support their gay son.
Had he been out most of his life? Like, was this new for her? Or,
I mean, he was probably between 30 and 40, 35 and 40. And I would imagine he'd been out for, you know, at least 5 years. I mean, certainly wasn't a new thing. No, right. It was not a new thing. And she'd met Jason.
Right.
She loved Jason. It's not about the relationship. Huh. It's not about his sexuality. It's about the institution of marriage.
Wow. Was she, is she a religious person or?
Yeah, they're Greek Orthodox. So that's often the case where they're religious. When we hear a story like that, it's usually because the parents are religious, in a religion that is too close-minded to believe that love conquers all.
Right.
Yeah.
Or we should just love one another. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I mean, I've had lots of situations like that, and it's really hard. You know, you ladies know, we are not just our clients' planners, we're our therapists, yeah. We're their accountants, you know, sometimes I find myself, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, we wear many hats for sure.
Have you ever had to have conversations, or maybe not have to have them, but felt compelled to have a conversation around that with any parents or family members?
Like on behalf of your clients?
It's not my place.
No. Yeah.
It's not my place. No, I wouldn't.
Have you ever been asked to and you declined?
I don't know that I've been asked. I can't think of a time that I've been asked, but it's just not my place. I don't think that it would be anyone's place to sort of convince someone.
Yeah.
I think it's a losing argument to convince someone to support marriage equality. I generally, as liberal as I am, I almost always steer clear of debating issues, even with my partner. I just don't really like to, even when we agree, she gets very worked up about things more than I do. Mm-hmm. She gets like super fiery, worked up, activist-y, and I do too, but she's more so than me. And I just don't, sometimes I just don't want to engage in it with anybody.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not, I'm not an argumentative type or a debater. It's not how I am.
Yeah. I think that's the sad in us. I'm not either. I don't like it. I avoid conflict. I'm not into it.
Yeah.
It's just like not my job to change someone else's mind. I just don't.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I do think that it's my job to promote inclusion and equality, but I'm not going to do it by lecturing. Yes. I'm not like, it's all about preaching to the converted and helping the converted become more converted or more inclusive and helping them become wiser. But it's not, I'm not going to, you know, get into an argument with the Westboro Baptist Church.
You've never had to like, I don't know, pep talk a parent or a member of the bridal party, like you're here, you decided you were going to be here. Now put a smile on your face and let's do it.
Wait, Christy, a member of the what?
Oh. Wedding party. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
That was a slip.
Or I was thinking they were two brides. They were two brides.
Bernadette
in
was
my
like,
head. That's okay. Specifically the.
I mean, I not about that issue.
What about vendors that I know we do our best to vet? Vendors. I had an experience with a maintenance guy at one of my weddings that I couldn't vet the entire hotel staff.
Right.
And he and I were in a room like setting up chairs for the ceremony. And when he found out it was two grooms, he like threw down. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, how much can I threw down in terms of like, what? Two dudes? I don't get it. There's so many beautiful women out there, blah, blah, blah. And I'm setting up for this ceremony thinking at least he's on the maintenance crew and he'll be off by the time, you know, I don't want to get into it with this guy. I just was sort of saying like, well, they love each other. They've been together for 30 years. So thanks for helping me with these chairs. And then I said, what time are you off? And he goes, I'm actually part of the catering staff for tonight. I'm doing a double.
Oh, crap.
So I'll be in there serving. And at that point I was like, okay, listen, I get you have certain feelings about this. You cannot be in there like leering at these guys or scowling or pour water on their lap on purpose. Like I'm begging you, if you're going to be in there, play it cool, and this is your job. I'm sure you're a professional. Just please, you know, keep your opinions about this to yourself. Yeah. And he did, and it was fine. Anyway, it was this experience I didn't think I was going to be in. And, you know, I wonder if I handled it the right way. But I mean, have you ever had vendors that you discover on the day of, like the DJ? Obviously, that was horrible when your friends were
married. That was before I started my company. It's happened a few times with drivers, like limo drivers, where I've talked to the sales rep and I said, okay, it's a same-sex wedding. I want you to make sure you send me a driver who's definitely going to be LGBT friendly. And they don't. They just don't have that conversation. And then, you know, we've had drivers who've, you know, sort of huffed and puffed and were clearly, you know, agitated. One guy, like, was blessing himself. You know, so I've had stuff like that, which is, there's really, I mean, fortunately, they're not too interactive with the couple. But, you know, we just got to pull them aside and say, you know what, do your job. At the end of the day, keep your opinions to yourself and do your job. There have been a few times also on site where we've had guests come up to my team and they have vented and they have expressed their own anxieties about being there. Usually it's a plus one, like the husband or wife of a coworker or an aunt or uncle by marriage who's there, and they're sort of there out of a sense of obligation, not because they feel like they, you know, truly believe in marriage equality. And so they sort of vent and they're like, I don't know how I feel about all this. This is making me really uncomfortable. And they talk to our team as if that we can relate, as if clearly we must agree. And my advice to my team and to anyone is just to listen. Again, don't get into it. You're not going to change their mind. Hopefully the wedding itself will be profound and powerful enough to have changed their mind on its own, just by the experiencing the ritual of two people coming together in love. So I just encourage my team members to just listen. Don't get into it. Don't provoke argument. Keep an eye on them. Make sure they're not drinking too much. Make sure they're not getting too close to the couple. And, you know, there's really not too much else to do.
Right.
I don't want a conflict. I don't want altercation.
Yeah, it's not the time or the place.
Yeah.
That being said, those are hopefully the rare guests that you get that, you know, the plus ones or whoever that didn't get the memo that this was going to be a gay wedding. Or just can't bite their tongue.
Yeah, they're just, you know, they're there because they've been dragged along.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for straight people who are going to attend a gay wedding?
Yeah, I would say a few things. One is, don't expect it to be all that gay. Like, don't impose your own sort of...
don't get disappointed.
Expectations.
Don't get disappointed if you don't see drag queens, you know? It's not like that our weddings aren't necessarily really over the top and, you know, just stereotypically gay. So, you know, don't impose that on us. Just have a good time. Just be really chill about it all. Don't expect anything. Just keep a really open mind and have a good time. Just be there to show your love and support. You know what? At the end of the day, it's all about just being a really chill person, having a good time, and being supportive.
Saying yes. Saying yes to the experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever it is. Yeah. My cousin married her partner a couple years ago, and they're pretty funny. They both have sort of a dark sense of humor, I guess, which I really appreciate. And she sent out this big family email because we have this like giant Irish Catholic family, and we all get on this email thread together. And it was a couple months before the wedding, and it said, I think the title was, "So you're attending a lesbian wedding?"
Yeah.
? And she wrote out her kind of tongue-in-cheek advice to all of us. And there are some family members on that thread that were not attending because they said it was because they couldn't afford to fly out. But it was super obvious why they weren't coming. And you know, the bumper stickers on their car says it all. So it was pretty funny, but very well written. And I need to repost it. Michelle, maybe I'll post a, we can post a link to that letter too, because it's so her tone of voice and in her experience, like, this is it, you guys, this is what we're doing. And here's how we think you should feel about it or behave. And it was pretty funny. So
yeah, that's awesome. I actually have been using an image of a ceremony program that has that basic same context. Like the headline on the ceremony program is, so you're attending a gay wedding, something like that. So I think that's awesome. I think that's, it's really fun. And some couples, and some couples are going to be more, I guess, punchy about it and, you know, and like let it fly than others. And other couples are just going to be more sort of traditional and unassuming about the whole thing. So it's fun. It's fun to sort of see what they come up with.
Mm-hmm. And as a wedding planner, I want to know this. Do you have like a routine? Like when you get like, let's say it's a Saturday, you've got a wedding and ceremonies at, you know, 2:30 or whatever. Do you have any routines or rituals you do? Obviously, I know now that you're meditating when you wake up, right? Mm-hmm. Regardless of whether or not you have a wedding. But what is a typical Saturday morning when you know you're going to be working? What do you do?
Yeah, I will I'll meditate. I generally do my thing where I meditate, then I read the news, and then I don't check email for the first hour of waking.
Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, so Exactly. I feel like when I actually do then check my email, I'm a lot more focused. Hopefully I'm not troubleshooting anything. Hopefully I'm not having to put out any fires or dealing with any upset texts or anything like that. So that's all assuming that there's none of that. And then I try to relax. I take it pretty easy. I make sure my emergency kit's ready to go. But I know that I'm going to be putting in a 12-hour day. So I generally am keeping it pretty chill until it's go time. I might watch a little bit of TV or, you know, again, water the plants or something like that. But I try to keep it pretty relaxed like I would do any other Saturday.
Yeah.
Because awesome. I know that when I'm on, I'm on.
I feel the same way. I know that I'm going to be on my feet for many, many hours and smiling a lot and sweating.
Yeah, exactly. I'll probably like do a text check-in with my couple to make sure they're keeping relaxed as well.
A happy wedding day text.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's great. Hey, what's in your emergency kit? A few things.
Oh, I have a crazy packed emergency kit. I mean, I have everything from the typical like first aid type stuff to, you know, things like hammers and pliers and staple gun and glue sticks. I also have tent stakes in my emergency kit.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, tent stakes are actually surprisingly useful. Gosh, it really is packed. It's so...
stuff you've gathered over the years, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously all the stain stick things. I'm really proud of my emergency kit. My partner is also a wedding planner. And
she is.
Yeah, she is. And sometimes she takes my emergency kit.
Nice.
Everything is all labeled in its own little pouches within it. It's
oh, I want you to take a picture and send it to me one time.
I'm
if you wouldn't mind.
Of course not.
I used to have mine in a rolling suitcase. Mm-hmm. Not a, you know, like a carry-on suitcase mm-hmm. size.
That's what I have.
Is that
it might be a little smaller than that.
It
is a rolling suitcase, but it's not. It's actually not a suitcase. It's like a rolling, like craft bag, thing.
Ooh, fun!
Yeah,
my brain is going on all the things I want to write about and shift about in certain presentations and stuff. So
yes, Christy. Okay. Also, why don't you explain what you do for Bernadette?
I am an affiliate of the Gay Wedding Institute, which is what Bernadette, would you say CEO or do you just say owner?
I say president. I don't know. I've been sort of struggling with that lately. Maybe I should say CEO.
I president is perfect. also, but I guess since your hands are still very, you know, founder.
Sure.
I don't, doesn't seem like you're still the one doing it.
Right.
And you very much are. So I speak smaller gigs and presentations about gay weddings based on the Gay Wedding Institute full certification course that Bernadette does. So if, you know, Bernadette goes to like a big hotel and there's 20 people there, then I might, hers is like a, 7-hour certification course?
Full day, yep.
Full day. And then I have started to talk to networking groups here in Dallas-Fort Worth and 45-minute increments of the information, sort of like a cliff notes of what Bernadette talks about.
I'm really proud to have you as a partner, Christy.
Oh, thanks.
She's a good partner.
Oh, thanks. Well, I sometimes get nervous that you're scratching my back more than I'm scratching yours. And I think that's just in me to worry about that with relationships. But I want to make sure that this is like feeding the larger part here, which is the Gay Wedding Institute and that work that you're doing. So I'm just so happy to be talking about it to people that want to hear more. And this industry down here in Texas has a long way to go. So it's heartening just to see that like people are signing up for these talks, and I'm not the only one talking about gay weddings.
Yeah, I'm grateful.
Bernadette, I just want you to tell our listeners how they can find you, all that good stuff, your website.
Yeah, so I have three companies and three websites. So first company is my wedding planning company, which is 14 Stories. So it's no longer called It's About Time. It's now called 14 Stories in honor of the 14 plaintiffs in that first case in Massachusetts that brought marriage equality to the state. And so that's 1414stories.com. Gay Wedding Institute is my training company for wedding-related businesses and hospitality businesses, and that's gayweddinginstitute.com. And my newest endeavor is the Equality Institute, which is theequalityinstitute.com. And the focus of the Equality Institute is to provide LGBT sensitivity training to frontline employees in industries beyond just hospitality. So it could be restaurants, retail, airlines, banking, other industries with a lot of frontline employees who want to make sure that those frontline employees don't accidentally misgender someone who's transgender or gender fluid, so they don't accidentally offend a guest.
That's great. And are you on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook?
Yes. So for Pinterest and Instagram, it's at 14 Stories. For Twitter, I tweet at Gay Wedding primarily, although I also tweet at 14 Stories a little bit. And then Facebook, I'm on all of them with all three businesses. And then my regular Facebook is, I think, facebook.com/Bernadette Smith.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for doing this.
It's been fun.
Yes,
seriously.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it. And you are very inspiring to us both. And I still say I met her first.
That's really kind of you, ladies. Thank you very much. This has been fun. I'm happy to help you any way I can. If there's anything anyone out there needs or wants to chat about, you know, I answer the phone. So give me a call.
What? You answer the phone?
A lot of the time, I answer the phone.
No.
I run a lean machine over here.
Nice.
A lean operation.
A lean machine. Yep. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It was great to talk to you.
All right. Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. The Big Wedding Planning Podcast at TBWP Podcast on Twitter.